Hi everybody, my name is Louise and I'm a compulsive overeater. Is this about typical when you want to talk about service, everybody leaves? So, let's talk about service. What is it? How do you define it? Without looking at the books or the pamphlets, what is service?
Doing
stuff, okay.
Contributing to the greater good.
Okay, anything else? How do you define service?
Taking care of yourself.
Taking care of yourself, yeah. I think it's all of those things. I know for me it's been an opportunity to grow. It's been an opportunity for me to practice those first three steps in a huge way. And so I want to talk a little bit about my service history and how that might be helpful to you. I understand from different conversations I've had that Greater Seattle Introverts is having a few challenges right now. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, in my opinion. I mean, we all get to have times that we're strong and times that we're more challenged, and that's the ebb and flow of life. You know, so we need to be aware of that. We also need to be aware of our role in that. Can we help it? So, when I came into OA, there was no intergroup in Calgary. And the purpose, we had a few of us that got together because we wanted to talk about, you know, there were these two meetings, right? Monday night and Wednesday afternoon. And we wanted to make sure that we knew what was going on at each other's meetings. Because you see, in 1980, we didn't know if Overeaters Anonymous was going to survive. There's only about 20 of us in the program in the city of Calgary. And we were concerned that there wouldn't be a meeting for me. I was concerned there wouldn't be a meeting for me next week, next month, next year. And by that time, I knew I needed it to live. So we got together at somebody's house and we just chatted about what was working at the meetings. Were we getting newcomers? Were they staying? What was going on? And what did we, you know, what was working? And it was very low-key. We did it with a potluck. It was lots of fun. I found one more place that I fit. And people listened to me, you know, and they didn't think I was stupid. So it was a real gift to me to be able to be there. And we did that probably 3 or 4 times a year for a while. And then we thought we should probably meet more formally because by that time we had a few more meetings. And so we get together every 3 months. And we had a table that we sat around and we kind of got to be a meeting, an intergroup meeting. But the reason we came together was to ensure that the meetings survived. At its simplest, that's the purpose of intergroup, is to meet the needs of the group in the area, to do projects that an individual group can't do. It would probably be pretty hard for a group of 4 or 5 people to organize a retreat like this. It'd be hard to collect the money to put the down payment to reserve the facility. But an intergroup can do that in the bigger sense. So that's the first thing. Intergroup meets the needs of the groups that it serves, and it takes on projects that are too big for an individual group to organize. And I have to tell you, I'm a compulsive, crazy person, and the very first retreat we had in Calgary, myself and a friend organized it. We decided that there needed to be a retreat in Calgary, so we did it. Because we'd been the one in Edmonton, and there's a bit of a competition between those two cities, so if they can do it in Edmonton, we can do it in Calgary, we have just as good of OA meetings. And so I called the round and got a speaker and reserved the facility, and then I went to intergroup and said, we're prepared to cover the cost on this, so if you want to host it, you can, but the work's all done. Because the stodgy old-timers had said we didn't have enough people to take on a retreat, and we didn't have the time to organize it, and we didn't have, we couldn't afford the loss, because we didn't have any money yet. I mean, we had zero for bank balance. And so we presented a fait accompli, and they said, oh, well, if there's profit, we'll take it, I guess. And being a, you know, kind of a clear-thinking group of women. And so we went ahead with that retreat, and it was a huge profit. And we agreed that we would do another one next year. Now, I wanted one in 6 months, right? Twice a year would be good. But they, older, wiser heads, thought we should only do it once a year. And we did that for a few years. And our intergroup grew. We got so that we were having meetings once a year or once a month, and we started evolving. When we started meeting formally, they asked me to sit as co-chair. And I'm going to tell you, I was so flattered. Right? I didn't have to do anything, right? Because the chair was always there. She had that. She was that 2-year longer term person than me, so I knew that I would never have to do anything. She was totally competent. And I could just follow her lead, and I could just sit beside her and bask in her glory. Yay for me. And so it was an easy way to be in her company and to feel good and to learn some stuff. I have to admit that at heart I'm a very nosy person. I like to know how things work. And particularly groups of people, I'm fascinated with human dynamics. So this gave me an opportunity to see how things worked in other places. And I want you to know, sitting in Calgary, which was about 600,000 people back then, we knew that we weren't doing it right. We couldn't be doing it as right as the people in Seattle or Portland. We knew that, right? Because we're so far away and we're so isolated. So we made all these really strange decisions. Like, all our groups are predicated on the big book, right? We're all big book thumpers in Calgary, the old timers are. And, you know, we opened the intergroup meeting with a reading from the big book. Back then we didn't have literature, right? You didn't have an OA 12 and 12. You didn't have the OA books. We just had the AA stuff, a few pamphlets. So we got together and we started working, and I was the co-chair of intergroup. And then her term was out. She said she wouldn't sit again, and they asked me to run as chair. And I kept saying, well, if you don't mind the mistakes I make, and, you know, because I didn't know how to do that stuff. I had always been at home in the evening. I didn't know how to run groups and lead meetings and do that sort. I just didn't know. And so, oh yeah, don't worry about it, you'll be fine. And my sponsor, the former chair, said, I'll sit right beside you, I'll be past chair, and I'll have to worry. And so I agreed. And I'm going to tell you, I learned so much. I learned that there's a difference between leading a meeting and controlling it. Novel concept. I learned that there is a responsibility that I have as the leader, as the chair, to lead. Doesn't mean I control, but it means I better know what's going on. I got the opportunity to get phone calls from groups because somebody had stolen the seventh tradition. Ever had that happen in a group that you're a member of? Somebody swipes the hawk? Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. And so we started talking about appropriate means of managing things. Because some of us are really sick. We're dealing at the board. We've kind of resolved now, and our resolution was to do nothing. But there's an intergroup founded by a lady on the East Coast, in the eastern U.S., and she was the first chair, and then she agreed to be the treasurer, and then she was the chair, and then she's now agreed to be the treasurer, and she's single, so she has the phone at her house. And since she's the treasurer and she's single, well, I'll organize the retreat. That's okay. I'm delighted to do that. So, a couple of the people at the group were not happy with the fact that there had been no information about the retreat. She kept saying, oh yeah, I'm working on it, but I haven't found a place. They had been to a retreat in a hotel three years before, so they went back to that hotel and said, you know, we really like this hotel, and we'd really like to have another retreat here. And we wondered, you know, about availability and getting the space and so on. And the sales director said, yeah, we'll be happy to have you as soon as you pay for the last one. None of the hotel bills had been paid. So they decided, well, there must be some mistake, right? Because the lady had been submitting treasurer's reports. They knew how much money the retreat had made. They made a profit every year. They knew what the bank balances were. She'd been submitting treasurer's reports every month. And one thing led to another, and guess what they found? the Integers owed almost $30,000. And this treasurer had the phone at the house, right? So when the hotel phoned to complain about non-payment, so they will get that to you right away, click. So, I mean, the decision of the Board of Trustees and the region board that Integers is in, we agreed that we have no responsibility, and we won't take any responsibility. That's an intergroup problem. And what can you all learn from their experience? Rotation of service is critical. That woman was the treasurer for 8 years. Right? But guess what? She said, no, if nobody else will do it, I will. And what did everybody else at the table say? Oh, sure, yay! I don't want to offend her by making her think she's not doing a good job if I volunteer. Okay, fine. $27,000. But they owe, yeah, at the Integral. Isn't it wonderful of her to keep the phone? It served a purpose. Now, I don't want you to think for a minute that every person who does service forever is stealing or cheating or lying. No, because that's just not the truth. But the purpose of rotation service, the rotation leadership that we talk about in the tradition, is so we don't get into that kind of problem. So that we each have an opportunity to learn and grow and take responsibility for what's going on around us. It's part of growing up. Yeah. It's part of what we need to do. You know, in the early days, many of you talked about being so self-centered that you needed to do service to get out of yourself. And I think that's true in part. But the other piece to it is we need to take our turn. Well, if you do this for 2 years, and then you do it for 2 years, and you do it for 2 years, none of us are onerously burdened. But the problem is, how many of you are group reps or have group reps, and you feel like you're never going to get rid of the position because nobody will do it? Okay? How many of you served on a board where you knew that nobody was going to step forward? Okay? So then you're afraid, if I take the job, I'm going to be there forever, and nobody's going to let it go. You know, nobody's going to step forward, so I can let it go. What's the answer to that? Let it go. My term is up in May as trustee, and I'm done. I'm taking files with me to WSBC to turn them over. Okay? I'm happy to help her in the transition, and I'm really glad to step up to the job. She needs to do it. This is her opportunity for growth. What happens, and I get this question all the time, what happens if your intergroup doesn't have anybody who's willing to step forward as chair?
Falls apart.
Yeah, sometimes it does. Yeah. You can rotate leading the meeting. You know, it's not perfect, but you can do that. What happens if a different chair serves every month? After about 3 months, somebody says, oh, this is crazy, I'll do it. And then that's the reference again. You can do that. You can be fluid and flexible. What happens at your group or at your intergroup if somebody volunteers and you don't think they have the qualifications or the qualities to do that job? Pardon?
Check the service manual.
Check the service manual, yeah. What we decided to do in Calgary, we had a wonderful gentleman, just a really good program, but not really a leader. And we didn't have a chair. He volunteered. So what does a group around the table feel like? We have nobody and he's volunteered. Our tendency is to say, well, I don't like it, but okay, you do it, right? So we decided to have a paper vote, yes or no. And there were, I think, 15 of us around the table. The vote was 14-1, no. Right? He wasn't very happy, and his feelings were hurt, and he didn't come back. to intergroup for a long time. But what happened was, we agreed that we were better to have no leader than a poor leader. How many times have you agreed to let a newcomer be the treasurer or keep the keys? Right? How does that work for you? Not well, usually, right? The reason we have abstinence requirements is because most of us need to learn to be consistent. We'll give the key to somebody and we never see him again. Then we're out scrabbling trying to get another key and get another coffee cut and run around because we can't get into the church or the hall or wherever we're meeting. How many of you have agreed to have your meeting at a place where a particular person has to be there to open the door? You know, like she works there, right? And how does she usually end up happening? Feeling? Resentful.
I have to come every week. I try to get away from this down here. I want to change groups, but if I go, the group falls.
Right? You can hear all that. That's how we think. Right? And so it's important that we take mutual responsibility. Is it okay to meet in somebody's office boardroom for a few months while you're finding a place? Yeah, you need to. Is that a good home base forever? Hell no. Because it puts too much responsibility on one person. And we don't do well with that. What is the purpose of intergroup?
What do you think? Good, okay, yeah. All right. What's the purpose of the groups?
Carry the message,
okay. Anything else?
Have a place for the newcomers.
Anybody else?
Recovery.
Recovery, right? The purpose of intergroup is to help the group so I can recover. What were you going to say?
It's a group meeting.
Yes, group meeting, same thing, in my mind. Okay?
Give what you've
received. Sure, that's part of the meeting. Okay? So we go to meetings to get well. I make a decision sitting in my living room. Oh my God, this is not working for me. Now, you guys maybe made a decision to come to OA because you weren't mentally well or spiritually well. I made a decision because I was fat and getting fatter. Right? That's why I went to OA. I came in gaining a pound a day. I couldn't stop eating. And so I went to my first meeting. The purpose of intergroup is to help those meetings survive and thrive and help recovery. So if your local intergroup is struggling, is it that most of you don't have the sense that they do something for you? How does GSI benefit the group? The print meeting schedules?
They have a hotline, they have
put out and
publicized newsletters.
Okay, all right, back there.
It's a funny information source. I ran into people who didn't even know about the retreat, and I said, oh, you check the OA website, you can't get the meeting. And like, the person hadn't even thought of that.
Okay, so funnels information, make sure everybody's aware. Are these important things? How many of you came into OA after making a phone call? Raise your hands, nice and high. What's your number? What would you have done if there was no phone line? How would you have got here? What would happen if you were going to your meeting and you didn't know about any other meetings around you? What if you honestly thought there was only the one meeting you could go to? How many of you have only ever gone to one meeting? Raise your hands nice and high. A couple of you? Okay. Most of you have gone to more than one. You rely on the meeting list. How many of you got help, support, serenity, an injection of energy in your personal program by coming to retreats? Yeah, me too. Okay. Takes the intergroup to do it. That's the purpose of intergroup. It's to help you recover by doing things at a broader level. Now let's talk about region. What's the purpose of region? Support the intergroup? Yeah, okay. Anything else you can think of?
But what's the region? Is that the region of the country?
No. In OA, we have 10 regions.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so region 1 is Alaska, Yukon,
part of what we used to call the Northwest Territories, the three western provinces, Alberta, Saskatchewan, British Columbia, Washington, Oregon, Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming. I think that's all of them. Oregon, yes, I'm sorry, I'm thinking that. See it on the map, I didn't say it, sorry. That's region one. Region 10 is part of Japan, the Pacific Islands, Australia, New Zealand. Region 9 is everything else outside of North and South America around the world. Region 8 is Florida and down into South and Central America. Region 2, Hawaii, California, Mexico. And truthfully, I don't know American geography well enough to distinguish the rest of them. Sorry, because they're in the mid part of it. East is, 6 is the East Coast, eastern part of Canada. 4 is St. Louis, and north from there up into Winnipeg, into Manitoba. 3 is Oklahoma, Texas, New Mexico, southwestern states. So those are our regions. So what is the purpose of Region 1? You have a Region 1 board. It has 5 people. I am a member without a vote on that board as the Region 1 trustee. So what is the purpose of Region?
Support the
intergroups. Yeah. I think the silence in the room suggests that Region 1 has a problem. That was my problem with Region 1. Shouldn't say that.
Who are you?
Yes?
Bylaws, the primary purpose of this organization is to aid those with a problem with compulsive eating and control of sexual anonymous and to serve and represent the OA groups and intergroups.
Right. So we have a good purpose written. How we do that is a challenge. So here's my personal bias. I grew up in OA in Calgary. And for years I thought that Region 1 served Portland, Seattle, and Vancouver, and nobody else. Because the board members were from here, and you all seem to know each other, and you're all part of the in crowd, and I'm sitting on the outside looking in. Now, I think the Region 1 board has done some good work over the last few years trying to bring more value to the groups and to the intergroups. For example, if you host the assembly and convention, we'll give you $1,000 to advertise the OA in your area. Okay? So you can do some PI work, you can put signs on boxes, you can do whatever. Too. The idea is how people increase the attendance at your meeting. So when the assembly's over, you've got more bodies in the seat. One of the things that made me crazy when I first came on, started coming to the Region 1 board, we went to Bend, Oregon to do a spring event. And Bend is an incredible country, a beautiful part of the world. And I flew to Portland, and then I flew to Seattle and changed planes and went to Portland. And from Portland, I jumped in like a 6-seater and flew to Bend, Oregon. And I didn't get into like 11 o'clock on Friday night. At home most of the day, I was exhausted. And we're doing outreach to the OA members in Bend, Oregon. And Saturday morning, we met in a church that had a marathon retreat in the big room. We were in a little office on the side. And we sat there from 9 in the morning until 5 at night, except for lunch when we went out and introduced ourselves and said, hi, we're here to support you. And then we went back into our cage and did whatever it was we did that day. And my response to that is that's no service to the local interior. Oh, yeah, we asked them for half their profits from the weekend because we came, after all. We graced them with our presence. So this board, that board at that time, made the decision that in future we would do a lot of our business by telephone. And then when we come out to have a board meeting, we will be the speakers for your retreat. And we pay the price. So we met Billings, Montana last summer. Right? And they brought people from a driving distance of 5 hours one way. Right? And some of the boards were there Friday night. I worked Friday, so I got there a little later. But some of the boards spoke Friday night. And then we had a short meeting, 3 hours, Saturday morning. And then we were the speakers. We took turns speaking on Saturday afternoon and evening. And then we flew up Sunday morning. And it's quite costly to bring all those people there, you know, the 5 of them in the board. But what we did was, what happens if you're in a small group and you've got a committed group of absent people present to talk to you? Okay.
they were rejuvenated again, right? They heard different stories. In a small town or at your home group, you know, you hear the same stories over and over again. And that's what happened to Dylan. So they were thrilled. Made a real difference. This year, this April, we have a board meeting. We're going to Kelowna. Same thing. Small intergroup. They have four meetings. They're fairly isolated. And we're going to have a three-hour board meeting, do some things that we have to do face-to-face. And the rest of the time, we're the speakers for their retreat. So that they can hear a different message. So that they can have this experience. Because when they do a retreat in Kelowna, they have about 20 people come. So they could have somebody different. So pretty significant change. One of the things we changed in assembly the last couple of years. How many of you have been to Region 1 assembly? Raise your hands. Don't be ashamed. Few of you, okay. Well, one of the things we used to do is when assembly officially starts Thursday morning, and it's business meetings Thursday, Friday. We end Friday at 5. And so Wednesday night, we'd have the intergroup forum. And so we'd all sit in a circle, whoever was there Wednesday night, and had was still awake. And we'd sit in a circle and we'd talk about what's working and not working in our intergroup. There's one problem with that format. Most people weren't there. They hadn't arrived yet, and the people who had were tired. So we made a decision to move that to Thursday morning, first thing, on the agenda of assembly. Because the single most important thing we do is serve the intergroups. So that you can talk about what's working and what's not working, so you can get ideas and notes and connections with other people to help your intergroup, to make your intergroup stronger. Lots of things can happen. This year the assembly and convention is in, here's my lack of U.S. geography, Oregon, way down south, Eugene, so wait, that's, is it Salem that's close to Portland? And then Eugene, okay, so we're in Eugene, and it's the weekend of Halloween. I always get Eugene and Salem mixed up, no offense to anybody, that's just my mind. And anyway, so we'll wait on south. And their first time that they're hosting us in a long time. And so there are some things that happen. Region 1 has some display boards. So if you're having a workshop or a PI day, you can have those boards, you know, tabletop displays. If you host a convention, they're going to get $1,000 to do some advertising about Overeaters Anonymous. Could be newspaper. One intergroup used it to build up their phone, to increase their phone lines. We don't care what you do with it. The point is to use it to advertise Overeaters Anonymous. The truth of the matter is that the proceeds from the convention pay for about half the operation of Region 1 board. So it's a significant chunk of our finances. And then we go and we do this outreach, and truthfully, more to little intergroups than to big ones, right? Because they're much needier. Then the region, then from the regional level, then to the World Service level, and so at assembly every 3 years, you affirm a candidate as you affirm up to three candidates to serve on the World Service Board, and then those three candidates go to Albuquerque, New Mexico, which is our head office, and they stand up and they make a little speech and they take questions, and then the body of the World Service Business Conference elects a member of the Board of Directors of Overeaters Anonymous. And that, for the last 3 years, has been me. So we meet four times a year in Albuquerque. One of those times is World Service Business Conference. I was just saying that one of the reasons I chose not to run again is to be the trustee takes 18 days of vacation a year. And I get 20. So, you know, all my holidays are chewed up in 3 days in Albuquerque here and 4 days there and 2 days here. So I'm due for the vacation. And so I would like to tell you that it's a truly onerous job, but I've learned not to lie. There's lots of traveling with this job. And I do get a fair bit of email. I actually didn't bring my laptop, so I'm suffering a bit of withdrawal. I have no email. Oh, my God. But I get probably 10 or 12 emails a day, which for me is not a lot. For some people, that would be quite heavy. Much of it is, if you send a request, a question to the OA office, World Service Office, they will ask you what region you're in, and they'll send it back out to the regional trustee. We have two kinds of trustees on the board, the general service trustees who look after the business of World Service,
who we hire to print the books, where we host the convention, how much the staff get paid. As a member of the board, I don't know the individual salaries of the staff. We have about 20 staff that keep us functioning. What hotels we're going to conference at, that kind of thing. They do the business. And so as a regional trustee, if you've got a question, it comes to me. And I can either answer it based on past experience, or I pull the board and see what experience the other 15 of the 16 of us have had in terms of handling a problem. So when you ask a question of World Service or of your trustee, you never get just my opinion or the trustee's opinion. You should get a compilation. So what do you think is the most common problem in Overeaters Anonymous today?
Agreement.
Actually, no, not really. Alicia?
Following tradition.
Mm-hmm. That's part of it.
Crosstalk.
I'm getting more questions about crosstalk than any other thing. Would you just shut up at your meeting?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, just don't talk. I get very few questions about how do we get more people to do service. It's an issue throughout Overeaters Anonymous. And it continues to be an issue. We're going to talk about that in a bit. I don't want to... Pardon? Food plans? Actually, we get a lot of questions about food plans anymore. We occasionally get questions about groups that request you follow a special food plan, or, you know, you have to be 90 days absent. We'd like you to be 90 days absent before you share. But we don't get a lot of questions about food plans anymore. Crosstalk is the single most common thing. And the second most frequent question I get is abusive people at meetings. Threats, right? What's your answer if you've got somebody who's being aggressive and unpleasant and potentially physically dangerous at a meeting? 911. Don't email the Board of Trustees. Call the cops. I promise you, I am not going to hop on a jet and come to your next meeting and escort that man out of there or that woman. Yes, absolutely, all the time. Second most frequent complaint, abusive members. We get sick people. Yeah. And you get people who come to meetings who think they have the right to threaten you, to make you do what they want. A question.
Yeah, I've been coming for a little over 90 days. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I even really know the definition of crosstalk. I mean, there's being inspired by what someone else shares, but so if you refer to that person, is that crosstalk, or is that somebody share, or... Like, people often, if you have a speaker, people often say thank you for
this
ability. So I'm not really sure.
And so the question is for the tape, what is crosstalk? So what do you think crosstalk is?
It's not to interfere. You're supposed to listen.
Okay, listening. Anything else back here?
Not making a comment and anybody else is sharing during the meeting.
During the meeting, not commenting, in the very back.
I think in our meeting, we have a good definition of not giving advice.
Okay.
And addressing your comments to the group.
Okay, rather than to the person. So addressing your comments to the group rather than the person. Any other definitions?
Allen on plot.
We'll talk about that later. Okay, anything else?
Not interrupting.
Yeah, okay. Any other comments, definitions of crosstalk?
Back
here.
Calling out comments everywhere.
Okay, back here. Personally, I would say no. The question is, can crosstalk happen after me? And I would say no, because crosstalk is the definition of what happens in the meeting. It is my responsibility, if somebody comes up and starts talking a lot about what I said, to say, thank you, excuse me, when I get uncomfortable about that. And if people try to give me advice, you might have guessed I'm pretty independent, I say, thank you for sharing, excuse me. You don't have to say it three or three times, I don't give you advice anymore. They label you an arrogant pain in the you-know-what, but they don't give you advice anymore, so that's good. Crosstalk generally is feedback or advice giving or responding to what the speaker said. And what I try to do, personally, is hold my comments to what I learned. I'd like to thank you very much, Sammy, for what you shared.
I'm feeling, you know, the spark this in me. You know, it's appropriate to say thank you. But then I... Thank you to me is not crosstalk. It's just pure politeness. But then I need to go into what I'm sharing about, what I'm about. And if I say I, how many of you were taught it's rude to start a sentence with I? Yeah, most of us were, right? We say they, right? Or we. If I keep my sharing with I, I'm not going to likely get into too much crosstalk. The second thing that I use, the second hint I use for crosstalk, do you guys know what the difference is between expressing a thought and a feeling?
Feeling
can be physical and in your body. A feeling is usually expressed in one word. Anger, sad, happy. Do you guys get a sense of what I mean when I say depressed? It's one word. Now, I might say, I feel depressed today. But you've got a sense of what I'm feeling. When I start talking about thoughts, I need sentences to express it. Okay? Now, sometimes people fool you and they say, well, I feel that this is a fabulous facility and that we should come back here again. They're not expressing a feeling, they're expressing a thought. So if I keep my sharing at a meeting around what I feel, I'm not going to give you the crosstalk, because I can't give you an opinion from feeling. It's saying that I feel. This happened in my life. You know, my daughter just, I have a new grandbaby, she's my fifth, and a little girl, and it was a high-risk pregnancy, and it was a real miracle that she's here. And every time I look at her, I feel good. I smile. She warms my heart. And nothing to do with what you said at your meeting, right? Now, you may say something that twigs that feeling for me, that memory, but then I need to talk in I feel. Does that make sense? Does that kind of resolve that issue for some of you? Yeah, I've got a question back there. Jana, is it?
Yeah, but actually not something else.
Okay, all right. Julia, question?
In a meeting, when there is a perception that there is some crosstalk going on, what is our responsibility as the fellows?
Okay, so the question is, if you're in a meeting and there's crosstalk happening, what's your responsibility? So what do you think of the group? What's your responsibility? Over here?
Aaron? We just say no crosstalk.
Okay. So you just as members of the group speak up, no crosstalk. Okay, yeah, back here.
In meetings it says no crosstalk, but if people do, usually the leader of the group may say that it's crosstalk. What you need to do is say in a nice way. Because I wasn't raised with a nice way one time. It was my first meeting and I thought talked to somebody, blah, blah, blah.
Okay. So the comment from the back of the room for the tape is, in their meeting, they say no crosstalk or advice giving in the preamble, and then they, in the introduction to sharing, and then they ask the chair to do that, and they ask the chair to do it nicely. Remembering that if it's your first meeting, you might not want to be publicly humiliated. So over here. Okay, so the question from the comment from the floor is, she's encountered members of OA who say, I come here to get advice. My response to that is, we don't give advice, right? We're not licensed therapists, we're not doctors, we're not psychologists, we only share our experience during the home. Over here.
Well, you know, I generally like to just go up to somebody after the meeting.
Okay.
And just say, you know, this is what crosstalk is. And, you know, we don't do it after the meeting. You know, do it during the meeting if you want to talk after the meeting or ask a question from somebody.
Sure.
I go ahead and do it. But if it's somebody that's egregious, right, you know, I've been known to say, please, you know, no crosstalk.
Okay. And so the comment here, just for the tape, because I'm conscious of these long blank spaces, is that if it's a new comment, take them aside after the meeting and say, this is how we define
crosstalk, we ask you not to do it, but if it's egregious, repetitive, interrupt them and stop them and say no crosstalk. Now I interrupted you, sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, there's some meetings where there's speaker meetings, and the first thing that the speaker, the one who's sharing says is, how wonderful, you know, what you shared was wonderful, thank you so much, so much recovery. And then they go on to talk about your subject is wonderful, being the 3-minute buzzer goes off.
Right.
And I think it's a way of popping out.
Okay.
And not sharing.
All right. So some people spend it takes too much time to thank the speaker, they never get to their own stuff. I went to an AA meeting on Thursday night. Every AA meeting is as different as every OA meeting. But, you know, they had a speaker, and at the end of the speaker, three or four people said, yeah, I really liked when you referred to that. It was really helpful. And so, you know, I think it's the spirit in which we do it, and we need to be attentive that we're not giving advice. One of the great strengths, in my opinion, one of the great strengths of Overeaters Anonymous is we have lots of women. We come together. Right? That's not to negate the men, but we bring something different to the table. But our greatest weakness is we're a bunch of women. Yeah. No offense, ladies, but, you know, we get caught up in some stuff that, you know, that particular meeting was mostly men, and the AA meeting. And the reason the woman, she's a client of mine, the reason she goes to that meeting is because they just talk the talk. There's no BS there. And so her opinion, that's a great speaker. I learned lots. It's good. What happens in Overeaters Anonymous, how many of you have Christmas traditions? Raise your hand. How many, you know, tradition. We do things a certain way. And we have in Overeaters Anonymous 12 traditions. They're the way we do things. They've proven to work over the years. Okay. The fourth tradition says, let me get my book out and read it so I don't strip the words. It's really bad when the trustee gets the words wrong. There are trustees who can recite bylaws. I'm not one of them. Tradition 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. So if you have a situation with crosstalk at your meeting, you need to figure out how to handle it. Talk at your business meeting. Bring it up. How many of you have been in a meeting where one person always is going on about crosstalk or another situation and nobody else agrees with her or him? Right? And you have to get to the point that you say, you know, we've discussed that 3 times and we're just not willing to talk about it anymore. Are they going to like you? No. Are they going to be happy with you? No. Do you have to listen to them anymore? No. Who wins? You do. I was doing a service and traditions workshop in Oregon, and they have one member who's at the end of the group had been quite difficult. And so we were having a conversation about perception, and she kept saying, well, it is this way. And I kept saying, no, it's what you perceive, it's your point of view. And you see out the window, I see all of you. And so after this, when we took a break, she came up to me and she said, you owe me a man. And you know, I understand, she's 6 foot, she's quite a large woman, and quite young, and I'm me, middle-aged, short, you know. So I'm looking up at her saying, what for? And she said, well, you were quite aggressive there. You frightened me. Really? Thank you for sharing. And I turned back to my conversation, and a few minutes later, she tapped me on the shoulder, and she said, she put her hands on her hips, and she spread her legs, and she looked down, and she said, I told you, you owe me an amends. And I looked at her and said, yes, I heard you. Thank you for sharing. And I went back to my conversation. And she's standing there glowering at me and breathing heavy, you know, in the way of big people who are angry do. And finally, I looked up at her and said, I get the feeling you're waiting for something. She said, I'm waiting for the amends you owe me. And I said, you know, the best thing I make amends for things I think I did wrong. We obviously don't agree about my behavior. And that's your stuff. We get so hooked in not wanting to offend or hurt or be assertive, right? We don't be assertive because we're afraid of hurting people's feelings.
Is it your fault if you see things differently? No. In the exercise this morning, we agreed that you all see, every single one of us, even though we're in the same room doing the same thing, see and hear different things. Mm-hmm. One of the things I always kind of laugh about as a speaker is people come up to me and they say, well, I really like when you said this. And they'll get a certain meaning from a sentence I said. Somebody else will come up to me 5 minutes later and say, oh, when you said that sentence, I got this. It's totally different. I said the same thing. Right? You're all filtering everything through your own stuff. It has nothing to do with me. It has to do with you and your perception, your understanding. And the same thing happens in meeting, and it happens in intergroup. If your intergroup is struggling and you're having a hard time, what needs to happen? What do you think needs to happen? Ideas from the floor. Pray. Okay, prayer is always a good thing. What else needs to happen? Pardon? Group conscious. Did you know that there's an intergroup inventory on the OA.org website that you can print off and do? Lots of questions in there. If your intergroup is struggling, maybe you want to do that. You could do it. There's one for groups too, by the way. Does it take courage and honesty to answer those questions and then share your answers with the intergroup at an intergroup level? Sure. Scary stuff. I think we need to do this. Maybe we need to do that. So you can do an intergroup inventory. What else does it need? The GSI is to thrive and grow and be strong and support your meetings and youth individuals. When that was just... Needs more representatives. Okay. So group rep, you're talking about, right? Okay. How many of you go to a group that has a rep? Raise your hand. Two of you. How many of you go to groups that don't have a rep? Oh, lots of you too. Okay. More that do than don't. That's good. And so, why don't people represent their groups at intergroup? What do you think? No absence requirements?
Or? Be a group representative. Okay. If there are no requirements, you don't need anything, period.
Anybody can go.
Anybody can go.
Okay, all right. That might be a problem. Anybody else?
Extra time.
Extra time?
If you're not going to get sharing sort of benefit from or...
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. Way in the back.
Some people have had experiences with arguing and that view and
okay, so to summarize that, sometimes intergroup is argumentative and difficult, so you feel worse coming out of there than you went in. Who wants to go? Over here?
Yeah, for kids in Seattle, it's the distance to drive.
Okay.
What intergroup people from the east side have to go way into Seattle to get to the meeting.
Okay, so the driving time, getting to and from, okay? All right. Over here?
At times, there have been dominating people who get angry when...
Okay, so dominating people, can you imagine dominating people who get angry when their opinion isn't heard and it's okay? Yeah. What do you need to do about those people?
Get rid of them.
Speak up!
911.
Speak up! Are they going to like it? No. Here's what happened at the Road Service Board of Trustees this year. As a regional trustee, if I want to run again for a second term, I had to come back to the assembly and put in an application, and I had to be reaffirmed by the assembly of Region 1 that I can go back and run. It's not automatic. I have to be elected up by you, and I could be one of three that are sent back to conference in Albuquerque. The general service trustees don't have that. They're not representatives of any geographic body. So when they're going to run again, they have to be affirmed by the sitting board of trustees. So they put their application in, they make a 5-minute speech, we're given a chance to ask some questions, and then we have a paper vote, yes or no. They can be affirming or we don't. At the board of trustees, if we don't affirm you, you don't get to run. Your application is not forwarded. And that happened this past year. A sitting GST wanted to run again, and that particular person sat during board meetings playing solitaire on her computer. Right? Didn't listen, was hard to get a hold of, didn't return phone calls, didn't respond to email,
and didn't get a lot of things done. And the vote was solidly against her. It was 9-6 no. Was that hard to do? Yep. Did she like it? Nope. Was the fellowship served? Yep. Sometimes the problem with our service bodies is that we lack the strength to do what needs to be done. And that's a hard place to be. We have to be very clear about that. Our leaders are chosen to lead, not govern. Sometimes we have to do really difficult things. Right? Sometimes we need to say to our chair, you know, is it just me or is that person really difficult to deal with? Because if that's a board experience, if everybody's having trouble dealing with John, is there any Johns in the room? Okay. You know, if we're dealing with sadness, then maybe we need to do something about that person's behavior as a board. How many of you get a clenching in your gut and your heart starts beating up as soon as I say that? Raise your hands. Yeah, of course you do. It's scary. What happens to the group if GSI falls apart and has no leader? Yeah, the groups start to fall apart too. It becomes a real issue. And so we have to find a way to relate to the intergroup at our own personal level. And my story is I chaired intergroup for a few years, and I discovered that if I used the things I learned in OA and Al-Anon, and at that time I was very involved in recovering from codependency and learning about how I like to control things and take charge and all that good stuff. When I used that, intergroup worked really well. Yeah. And I have to tell you that I've been in Calgary for 27 years, and I got a phone call 2 weeks ago from somebody in the program saying, I just wanted to pick your brain and see your experience, Louise, because I respect what you think, about a situation going on with a marathon they were organizing. Now, that wasn't Louise the trustee, because Louise the trustee has no power whatsoever. All I can do is refer you to the traditions and share with you what we learned at the board level about the work. What it was one woman reaching out to an old timer in her community saying, what do you think about this? I don't know about you, but I never thought that would happen prior to OA. Right? Such an honor to be respected in my home group, my home intergroup. I got a phone call from the chair of ministry the other day. One of the rules is that you're on the board of trustees, you can't sit on any other service board. And so I don't go to my intergroup meetings unless I'm invited. I don't have anything to do with them. And so she phoned me, the chair phone, and said, well, your turn's up in May and we have elections in June. What would you like to do? And I said, nothing. Talk to me next year. But I was really flattered, right? To be welcome in your home group to do stuff is really neat. It's really quite amazing. I had the privilege of chairing the Region 1 Convention Assembly in 1986. I have been intergroup chair a couple of times. I served as their treasurer for a year. I was very involved for about 10 years, and I stepped out and did nothing for a while, and then I went back in and did a little bit of stuff for a few years. And then BC, who was the chair of Region 1, called me in 2004 and asked me to consider standing for trustee. And to my amazement, you affirmed me. Don't get rid of this gentleman and I that were affirmed. What I know is that if we don't have service bodies, we don't have meetings. How long do you recover if you don't have meetings? We don't do well operating in isolation. For those of you who've been around for a while, do you remember when there weren't any meetings? There weren't many choices? And so I encourage you to think outside of the box about what it means. One of the things we did in the board is that because we were spending so much time reading committee reports and doing all that tedious stuff that has to be done, but is boring to hell, we agreed to read business reports ahead of time, and we discussed them on a conference call. So maybe because of the distance involved in your GSI meetings, maybe you need to set up a way to do conference calls from the board meeting. Maybe you need to set up video conferencing so people can participate via their laptops. You don't have to drive.
drive-through 4 hours once a month. That's a huge commitment. That's a whole day out of your weekend. I get that. Okay. How many of you are happy to be worker bees filling in the slot behind the scenes, but you don't want to step forward because you don't have time? Any of you in that situation? If you're busy, yeah, that's another issue. Have you all noticed, is it just Calgary or is it the rest of the world, that life has speeded up a lot? Right? The demands on us seem to be never-ending. And so I think as a fellowship, we have to look at new and creative ways to get the work done, to give us the opportunity to serve each other and to be in service to each other. Who's the chair of intergroup right now? They're in transition. Okay, so we don't have a chairman in the group. So right now, somebody's missing the opportunity to be in service to all of us. Now, people say to me all the time, oh, I don't know how to do that. I can't do that. It's too big for me. Well, maybe you need to try it. Maybe you need to let the wisdom of the in-group, if they think you can do it, elect you. Or not, if they think you can. Maybe it's an opportunity to evolve and grow and become who you're supposed to be. I chaired in the group for a number of years, and then I served a couple of terms, and we set up an alternating year for elections, and so they asked me to sit in next year. So I sat 5 years as the chair of the group in Calgary. And then I was past chair and blah, blah, blah. Anyways, in that time, I was volunteering. Part of my amends was to do a little bit of community service work because I had been a taker my whole life. And so I volunteered in our community. And it was really funny. I went to the meeting. We had kind of a dead community association. I went to the meeting. And my husband said to me, as I left, what job are you going to take on? I said, nothing. I'm just going to listen. And I got nominated to be president by this group of strangers. It was really bizarre. I thought, oh no, I'm not going to do that. And then God, as I stood up, the words popped into my mind, well, where's God's will in that decision? So I said, oh, okay, that will not mind be done. I'll let my name stand. There's multiple that I'm elected to be president. I just about fainted because I've been chair of the intergroup, but I didn't know how to do that, right? And then the next month, the city came to us, and they have a thing in Calgary where you apply for grant funding to build community facilities, and we needed a new center. And so they said, we've got extra money, why don't you apply for that? And so I got to oversee writing a grant application for $750,000 and planning that and organizing it. And I didn't sign up for that, but it was really interesting and I did it, right? All the time being afraid I was going to look stupid. You know, we built the hall and they asked me to supervise the construction. Now I was home full time at that point in time, so I could do that. I had the time. I'm not saying that you should all, you know, strive to do that. One day, we had this particular, we used the hall for bingo, and at that time we allowed smoking inside in bingo in Calgary. We don't anymore, thank God. And so we put an air exchange unit in it, so that meant every 6 minutes all the air was recycled, so the smoke shouldn't be too bad in there. And the unit we put in didn't work. And so I will never forget the day I'm standing in a circle of men. Right? I got my high heels and a business suit and probably my hair was this color because I ran the whole gamut with colors and length in my hair. And there was an architect and an engineer and a guy from the heat company and the superintendent on the job. And I said to them, I've read the specs. This is how it's supposed to work. It's not working. If you don't fix it, you're not getting paid. And they all just kind of looked at me. Oh, what do we need to do to fix it? I said, I'm going to tear the roof off the building and replace the unit. You're going to fix it because we're not paying for this. And then it dawned on me. The architect made, what do you think, $500,000 a year? And the superintendent made $150,000, and the owner of the construction company probably made a lot more. And we went around the circle, and I was the volunteer. No money for me. And so I thought, oh my God, I better go to school. Better get an education. I better start making decisions so I can get paid for applying the things I've learned to intergroup. It's just what happened. Right? So I went out and I went to work, started school, ended up working for the provincial government,
And then I went to private industry. I had staff across Canada. I had, it was a bigger budget. I traveled a lot. I had an executive position. And it was really cool. All because I came to industry. And that may not be your story. But what I know is, if you suit up and show up, you'll learn what you need to learn. How many of you have been to regional assemblies? Raise your hands. You're good. Okay. One of the things, one of my pet peeves about assembly and conference is we seem to have got ourselves into a cycle of bylaw and policy changes and debating, and we just do it over and over and over again. Who likes talking about bylaws? Raise your hand. Nobody. Oh, one of you back there. Okay. That's what I mean. All right. Not my cup of tea. I understand that they're necessary, but I really don't like doing it. But how do we change what is in Overeaters Anonymous? By suiting up and showing up and changing it. We just sent out from World Service the agenda for World Service Business Conference. And there's a whole bunch of motions on there. And they go to the intergroup, and the intergroup says yes or no. Yes, I'd like this discussed and voted on. No, don't put it on the agenda. They have to get a certain percentage of yes votes from the intergroup to respond to get on the agenda. How many of you have ever sat in on that discussion? One, two, three, four, half dozen maybe. So guess what happens? Every year we have 37 things on it. I think the word the should be changed to 2 in bylaw 7.3 section C1A. Oh, jeez, I'm glad to be here.
It seems to me that so many of the things that come in that are just bullshit.
I agree. The comment was that a lot of that stuff seems not really relevant. I agree. And the only one who changed that is us when we voted the intergroup level to say, no thank you, I don't want that discussed. Period. If region isn't meeting the needs of GSI, if region 1 isn't doing it, you need to tell the region board, me included, what they need, what you need from them. If you as a group are not getting your needs met or not getting the support you need from an intergroup, you need to tell them so you can get that. Here's the truth of the matter as we understand it as Board of Trustees right now. Membership in Overeaters Anonymous is going down in the United States and Canada. We don't live as a fellowship unless we buy literature. Most of our, a good chunk of our operating revenue for World Service Inc. comes from the sale of literature. Who buys the bulk of the literature?
Newcomers.
Newcomers. What happens if they don't come? They don't buy literature. What happens then to the stocking and sale of literature in the future? Goes down. What happens to the ability of Overeaters Anonymous to have conventions, to deal with issues, to support the groups? How many of you have been to a meeting outside of your hometown where you went on and looked at, have you ever looked at the, thank you, how many of you have looked online and looked up a meeting somewhere else? Yeah, lots of you have. If we don't have World Service, we don't have that service. But if we don't get and keep newcomers, we're not going to have World Service. Because we're dependent on literature to create the money to do those things. Many of you are involved in the high-tech world, well, the websites aren't cheap. We're in the process of translating ours. We're going to go to do a duplicate in Spanish this year. And it's really exciting. We made a decision to do a public awareness campaign to try and make the world aware of Overeaters Anonymous. Because we're anonymous, we're not secret. People can't come to us if they don't know about it. And so there's some decision to spend some money and try and get some TI work. I found it really interesting. I work for the health region, so I'm around nurses and dietitians and doctors all the time. None of them male and none of them single, but that's probably a good thing. Anyway,
there was an article printed off on the printer next to my office from the Canadian Dietetic Association about the 10 most successful weight loss routes in Canada. Didn't include Overeaters Anonymous. We weren't even mentioned in the article. And it was a reprint from the American Dietetic Association with statistical analysis amended for Canada. When I asked the dietitian about it, she said, Overeaters Anonymous, I've never heard of that. What is that? And so a support group, it's a group based on the 12 steps of alcoholism. Oh, she said it's a support group. So people go and lose weight, but they come to you for support. Whoops. If they don't know about us and what we're about, they can't send people to us. That article went out, it's first in their national magazine, both in Canada and the U.S. Went out to thousands of dietitians. How many of them who've never had a client who's been in OA and been successful? How many of you think are going to refer to OA? Nobody. They don't know about it. So we have some challenges in terms of our fellowship. Now, I don't want to paint a black picture. I can be really draconian. I know that. Overeaters Anonymous will survive because you and I are going to keep going to meetings. It's a whole lot easier with literature. Have any of you gone on Amazon lately and looked for the 12 and 12? What's it sell for?
$1.50.
It's cheap. Right? Unmarked, life name, buck and a half. Because we have lots of people who come in and bought them and then sold them. It's really impacting our sales. It's really impacting our survival. We've been talking to Alcoholics Anonymous. Before we started this public awareness campaign and we made a decision to do a membership survey, some of your groups are going to get postcards this year in the next few months asking how many people regularly attend your meetings. Please send them back. Put a number in and send it back so we can know. Next year we're going to do a demographic study and you'll, more groups will be contacted and we'll ask how long, how many members, how long have they been in the program, what's the average age? And because what we've realized is that very interesting, the chair of Alcoholics Anonymous called our chair and two other 12-step fellowships and invited them and their executive directors to a meeting in New York, and that's actually the end of February. And I want to talk about issues facing 12-step fellowships today. Because AA's demographics indicate two very interesting things. Their average age is much older. It's getting higher every time they do the survey. They do it every 3 years. So the average age of the member in AA is increasing, and the length of sobriety is increasing. So what does that tell you?
No newcomers.
Now, Alcoholics Anonymous, their third tradition, anybody who has a desire to stop drinking can come to meetings. What happens to young people today? How many of them are straight alcoholics? Not many. Most people come in drug addicted and alcohol addicted. And for whatever reason, they're not staying. So they've got lots of old-timers, long-term sobriety, but no newcomers. What's going to happen in 10 or 15 years, 20 years?
God.
Yeah, it's going to be a real problem, right? Now, does that mean AA is going to close? Oh, no. You know, I mean, there's also going to be people recovering and striving and searching for sobriety through that fellowship. But their ability to carry the message, if they don't fix whatever that situation is, I don't know what it is, I have no opinion, I'm going under that fellowship. It's just not, it's their observation to us. We as a fellowship have our own issues. Take a look around the room. Do you remember when we used to have 16 and 18 year olds in the room? And we used to argue about whether we should let them come to meetings because we didn't want them to hear what we had to say. And I know there are still young people, but there sure aren't any of you here. I came in at 30. I'm now pushing 60. I'm not a young person anymore. I think it's tragic that on the Board of Trustees, there's one person under 50, and there are five over 70. Right? to do that kind of work, you need the time, which means you probably don't have little kids, that career settled enough, you can take that time off. Even the Christian life work, when you look around, that means Judith and I aren't exactly 30 anymore. No offense, Judith. Neither is anybody else who's on there, right? Because it takes time. So I would encourage you to take a look at what role does service play in your recovery. What do you have that you can use to be of service to the other compulsive overeaters? Because I'm here to tell you it's your turn. I've done my turn. Right? And I will do my turn again, probably in 5 years, doing something. But not today, it's your turn. You see, we have to take turns being of service to each other so our meetings survive. So our intergroup survives, so our region can function, so we can have world service. Alright, so somebody mentioned it's 2 hours to drive to intergroup, and the meeting is, how long is your intergroup meeting? 3 hours?
Hour and a half.
Hour and a half, 2 hours? 2 hours. Not for everybody, but let's just say 6 hours, okay? So 6 hours once a month. Alright, so close your eyes, and I know you're all math challenged. I want you to think about an average day before you came into the program. How much time from the moment you got up till the moment you started breakfast were you thinking about food? While you ate, how much thought did you give to anything else but the food in front of your face? After breakfast, how much of your day was involved until you went to bed in thinking about finding, securing, buying, stealing, or eating food?
Right here.
Multiply that by 30, because you did that every day. You see, it doesn't matter how much service I do, I can never equal what I spent eating, shopping, cooking, thinking about, fantasizing, dreaming, or stuffing myself stupid. I can't do it. How many of you binged your last binge and spent $2? Oh, no old-timers in the room. Then I challenge you to put more money in the gas pot when it goes around. I'm the old program, I'm recovering, I'm managing my money. No, you're not. You're depriving the fellowship of its survival. If you can eat $5 once a day and call that a binge, why can't you put $5 once a week into the pot? I challenge you to consider that. What does $5 buy you today? How many people squat? Oh, God, it's $125. My God. How much did you spend on food in the last month, in the last year? How much have you spent at Weight Watchers and Jenny Craig and God knows where else? What does this program work to you? We come in here and we assume that it's free. So we don't have to do or pay anything. And if we're asked to pick up the tab, we get angry. I don't know about you guys, but hotels in Calgary don't go for $100 a night. Our meeting rooms are expensive. Our paper isn't free. Our books are expensive. We have to figure out how we're going to survive, and the only person who can make that decision is you. And so I encourage you to consider the alternative. How badly do you want to vote me next week? How much do you want to have one meeting within an hour or two's drive? How important is it to you to have this fellowship? And if the answer is yes, it matters, then open up your book at the meeting and clear your calendar to help yourself and the rest of us survive. Without this program, I will make it. I know that. I was suicidal when I got it. And I will be again if I don't have the support of people like you in rooms like this. Louise will not step off of her sofa. Thank you for listening. Let's say we surrender to her.